Mark Mason, it's time for session number 5. How are you?
I am absolutely fantastically magical, but I don't want you to worry because I'm getting better. How about that?
I love it. I love it. So I got, was it a text message or an email from you that said the following? Hey, proposal for Friday call. What would you think about quickly segueing into a discussion about seasons of motivation? I go through these enthusiastic bursts of high motivation and amazing productivity, followed by a season of procrastination and low productivity. Then I get peeved, is what I'm going to rephrase. I get peeved and I repeat the cycle. Think we can make an episode or something out of this? And I'm like, yep, let's do it.
Yeah. So a little segue. This is actually derivative of the homework that you gave me. And I want to acknowledge that. So, you know, for people that may be joining us for the very first time, this is the fifth coaching session that we've been through where we're going to end up by the end of the year with me having a coaching practice into coaching clients. We've been working through that. And we've been, you know, deep diving into stuff because we've got the time and I've got the interest and you've got the skills, right? So that's a perfect match. And last time we met, we kind of went off onto a journey of understanding this exercise that originated with Tony Robbins of understanding, you know, values basically. And when I dug into that, as you challenged me to after our last call, what I'm starting to realize is that maybe I need to understand how my values are giving me leverage or not giving me leverage over the things that I'm trying to accomplish, right? My frustration is that I have by any measure, I feel like I've been enormously successful in my life. I would describe it as blessed, right? And I'm trying to do these additional things and I get very excited about them and I make a massive amounts of progress usually in that excitement. And then eventually that excitement wanes, I get distracted, life impinges, the margins close in, I can't seem to make the progress that I imagined I would make. And I'm frustrated by that. And I feel that's happening to me right now. And I'm trying to understand how this values exercise that you challenged me to complete and this observed behavior, so I think it's a behavior, how they overlay and whether or not that's part of it. So that's what I wanted to see if you could help me work through today.
Okay. So the first question I have for you is, did you actually do and complete the values exercise?
I would say I actually did it, but less rigorously than might be like if I said I actually did it, that would be like I printed it out and I wrote in all the blanks and did all that. I didn't do it that aggressively, but I actually went through it. I spent time on it and I came up with answers, but maybe not as thoroughly as I didn't probably extract all the value out of it. Does that make sense?
We'll find out. So my question is, regardless of whether you printed it out or not, is there a document somewhere where you can tell, not that I want you to go do this, by the way. I just want to know, does this documentation exist? At any point from this moment moving forward, are you able to go and look at a document and clearly describe to yourself what you're moving towards and moving away values were? And each of the rules associated to them, what they were before you did this exercise? That's question number one. And then question number two, do you also have documentation on what you intentionally chose to be your values moving forward and what your new roles are to make it easier for you to experience success in life. Do you have that document that you could go in and evaluate?
No.
Okay. Okay.
No, but I can articulate that, but no, I don't have like a dot. Like if you said in the next 30 seconds, email me a document that meets those criteria. No, I can't do that.
All right. So why not?
I would say I went through the exercise, but I didn't take notes. I mean, I didn't completely do the assignment. How about that?
Yeah. And so my next question is, why not?
I got hung up on, I would say probably I didn't invest enough time in it, maybe. So I stopped prematurely, but I got hung up on what I recognized was my main moving away from thing. And then my main moving away from value. And maybe this is a limitation of, maybe this is a muscle of mine that's not very well developed. I don't feel that I'm very good at and a high level of introspection. Like I second guess myself a lot in this exercise. So in these questions, like, you know, of these five values, which one is more important to you, this or this? Making that decision, that qualitative decision, I find that both difficult and I feel a lot of uncertainty around this. So I guess I would say I do not enjoy that part of this exercise.
Okay.
And so maybe that's a reason that I didn't drive it all the way to completion.
Okay. So.
And as I hear myself say that sounds like an excuse, but I'm just telling you.
No, I get it. The question that I have is, so in your mind, why was it so important that you get it absolutely right? What was it about that, you know, I might make the wrong decision of which of these is more important than the other? Where the idea of, well, let me just take my best guess at this and see where this thing leads and see what this whole exercise is all about. And, you know, maybe I do it right, maybe I do it wrong, but I've done the exercise. I did all of the instructions and let's see what comes out on the other side. And then I can evaluate that with Cliff next time we get together. What was it that kept you from doing that?
What was it that kept me from
the thinking I have to, because you say, what I'm hearing you say is that I got stuck in this process, yeah, of evaluating which one of these values is more important to me than this value. And I'm like, man, I just don't know. But I also heard that maybe I didn't set aside enough time for it. And so the question is the, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important do you think it was to do this assignment or this exercise?
Scale of 1 to 10, how important? Yeah, that's a good question. 7.
Okay. Yeah. So 7 out of 10. So basically anything when we get into less than an 8, 9, or 10, then it's not a level of certainty that there's a lot of value here for me, which is no problem. And by the way, this
there you go. Okay. Okay. Yes. So yes. So it's not obvious to me that this works for me. That's I mean, and it's in the detail. So if you'll excuse the phrase, it became obvious to me that there are some values sticking out for me, and it became the Cliff's Notes of this thing, right? So I took a shortcut. I saw a shortcut and I took it, and which was just to jump to the end.
Yeah. And I make no judgment of how things have gone and what you've done. What I'm trying to evaluate is because the exercise is follow these step-by-step instructions. Do this.
I see that.
And then do this. And then do this. And by the end, you have two different documents. You had what your original values were, and then you have your intentional values. The original values are what you've accumulated over a lifetime of living unconsciously. This is what your operating system of beliefs, your model of the world is this. And it provides this very eye-opening. It's like, well, no wonder I'm not achieving these things, and no wonder I'm always feeling these things. The odds are stacked against me based upon my own set of rules that I didn't know all of this was within me. And then it's like, well, based upon this, now knowing the assignment is that I can actually choose what my belief system is moving forward. I get to choose what values are most important to me rather than having societal norms dictate to me what should be the most valuable. Right here, I can create the life I want and what I believe are the rules for me to feel these different things. And then you could walk away and say, wow, okay, this is what I want my life to be. And you have these two documents and you can say, okay, where am I? Am I working under the old paradigm here or working under the new paradigm? But here's what I will say. The opportunity still exists for you at any time to go through and do this values assignment. Whether or not you do it, it doesn't matter to me. There is, I think, some level of value to it. And but taking a shortcut rather than the following the step-by-step and things and coming away with two written documents, anything short of that, this value has, in my mind, from my experience with it, has little value.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Noted.
Yes. And I will say, I have another excuse. This is not easy. It is not easy for me to answer these questions. So when I go back, I'm kind of go back and thinking when I spent time on this, I have a lot of uncertainty around the answers. I feel like, I'm an engineer, right? I feel like I have a relatively high emotional IQ for an engineer, it's hard for me to answer these introspective questions for some reason. So that's something I guess it boils down to, I need to try harder.
Maybe. Here's another thing to consider. And this might be something that if you're interested, we could at some future time, we could even devote a future session to it. Again, it to me, Mark, I don't think the success of your life in any way hinges right. upon you completing this exercise. You understand this, right?
I do.
All right. And if we don't move your belief in the value of this exercise beyond a 7 out of 10, and in fact, if we don't even get it to a full 10 out of 10, then I say it might be a waste of time to even try to do it. However, here's what I could say. Not a big deal. You didn't get it done. You found it challenging to do these introspective questions. And here's what I know to be true is it might be challenging for you to look at those questions and come with the answers. But what I know to be true is if I were sitting here literally asking you the questions and I were writing your answers down for you, they would flow from you naturally. There's something going on in the way that you're estimating the value of what is being asked there. So I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. Tell me one question, any question that seems to be challenging for you.
Well, I certainly feel challenged. So I list, these 5 to 7 values.
So name one value.
One value of things that are important to me.
Yeah, that values that you emotions that you want to experience. Just name
like
one.
Financial security.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So financial security. Yeah. So the next question is, let's just assume that that's been put on your list, and let's just assume that you put it in an order. By the way, it's not absolutely essential that you have it in the exact perfect order. If we've got, matter of fact, it's not even important that, if we've said, hey, let's choose 5 to 7, it's not actually important that you have your exact top 5 or your exact top 7. More importantly is to understand what's going on in our belief system and how our beliefs and rules are stacked against us. And I'll show you exactly what I mean by this. Financial security. Mark, so let's just assume that you've already put it in order and financial security is one of your moving forward values. And let's say that before you're rewriting your rules up until this point in your life, what has to happen for you to feel financially secure? Just answer that question. What's one thing that has to happen?
I have to be able to pay my bills, for example.
Okay, so I have to be able to pay my bills. All right, so I'm gonna write this down. Let me get my pen going here. Have to be able to pay my bills. All right, what else has to happen for me to feel, or for Mark to feel financially secure?
Have to be able to deal with changes in my income.
Okay, deal with changes in income. Okay,
unexpected changes.
Okay, unexpected.
Like being laid off or, some strange thing.
Okay, laid off, etc. All right, what else has to happen for you to feel financially secure?
I need to have the, a plan for retirement.
Okay.
Something like that
must that have planned for retirement. It's
working.
All right. What else has to happen for you to feel financially secure?
A low amount of debt.
Okay. Low amount of debt. All right. What else has to happen for you to feel financially secure?
Well, we'll see. We covered income, savings, retirement, debt. I'd say that's, and maybe a way to make money. Let's say that's part of income, but let's say, some kind of skill, some way to generate income.
Okay. So a way to earn
those 5 things.
Yeah. A way to earn income. All right. So those are your 5 things. Is there anything else that you feel you need to feel financially secure?
I mean, not anything that doesn't fall into those categories. I would say no.
Okay, great. So, by the way, you're accurate in understanding there are a number of subcategories for each of those, of beliefs. So it's like deal with changes, must have money for retirement. It's like, okay, how much money do you have to have in retirement for you to feel financially secure? There's all sorts of sub beliefs. But the point here that's being made is that one of the things that I believe I know about you, because we're so close, is that so far in your current experience of life, all of those things are taken care of. Is this correct?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're substantially taken care of. Like I'm still working towards retirement, and I'd I'd like to have twice as much savings that I have or whatever. But yeah, substantially, those are satisfied.
That exactly. So the good news is that one thing I know about Mark is that one of his highest values is that he feel financially secure. And based upon your current beliefs about what must happen, all of them being met, you feel financially secure.
Yeah.
And that's a great thing. Now, the interesting thing is that if you were to find any one of those five that are not met, you would feel financially insecure.
That's true. Yep.
This, by the way, and what I'm getting at, Mark, is this is really the point of the exercise.
Yeah.
In the belief system of all of the things you believe that must happen for you to feel this thing, this financial security in your scenario here, everything has to be working in perfect order. Any one of them that's not met, boom, you're not feeling what you want to feel. Yeah. Now, in your case, a lot of this is within your control. And these beliefs aren't so far out of alignment. However, I also had financial certainty on my list. And let me share with you some of my values. So give me just a second. I'm going to go pull it up because I remember doing this so well. And this is where your beliefs, at least in this category, were not as far out of whack as mine. All right. So let's see. What was this called? This is called the values moving forward and towards. And let's see if down here I have cliffs old and new. All right. So here is my old. Okay. Peace and certainty. Now that's what I call mine was peace and certainty, which is also certainty is my financial certainty. Okay. Are you ready for my things? What must happen for Cliff to feel financially secure? Number one, I must never be in debt, or at least outside of my mortgage. All right. That's I could put that little addendum on there, but outside of my mortgage, I must never be in debt. Stephanie and I, when we first got married, I brought tons of debt into our relationship, into our marriage. I then trained and taught Stephanie how to build debt with me. And so we did for the first decade or so of our marriage. And then we were introduced to Dave Ramsey's, you know, financial plan and all this other stuff. And we did the debt snowball. And in February 2007, we became debt-free except for our mortgage, where we stayed debt-free for more than a decade. Outside of our mortgage. And as a result of that, you would think we felt financially certain. I felt a level of peace financially. I did not. Because the second rule, I must have a secure and reliable income that meets all of my current and future needs. Now, I was pretty much all of my current needs, being able to pay the bills is the current, right? That's pretty doable. The only problem is this language, all of my future needs. I don't know about you, Mark, but I don't have a clear picture of what all my future financial needs are.
Right.
And so there's a level of uncertainty about what those future needs are. And because my belief is that I must have a secure and reliable income that not only meets all of my current needs, but all of my future needs. And then coming from my insurance career and home and auto and health insurance, it's like, well, gosh, what happens if I have, you know, cancer, or what if I have this thing? And and there's all of these different financial things. It's like, well, I can't feel this. And by the way, bullet point or rule number two in my list was never going to be attainable. There's never going to be a time in my life where I will know all of my future needs, financial needs. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Okay. So my third one is I must have a fully funded emergency fund and a retirement fund. All right. And so my fully funded emergency fund, that is attainable. We've had that several different times. We've depleted it several different times, and we've built it, and we're somewhere in the process in between of that.
Sure. You had several emergencies.
We've had a couple of emergencies over time. And technically, I have a retirement fund, but if I'm going to be more honest, Mark, the thing is, not only must I have a fully funded emergency fund, but it's also fully funded retirement fund, and also that I'm currently consistently without fail contributing to it.
Yeah,
that has not been my experience over time. There's been some lack of discipline in certain areas such as that, and so I've not felt that financial certainty. Now, I must be in a place where if I were no longer able to work, that all of my current and future financial needs would be met. This was also on there. And so what I'm getting at, Mark, your beliefs about what it would take for you to feel financially secure are somewhat reasonable, attainable, and things that you have done. My beliefs up to that point were unattainable, unrealistic, and could never be lived up to in certain categories of the beliefs. And so that's why this thing is like, wow, what? No wonder I never feel financially at peace. I never feel financial certainty because I've got this belief that I should have all of these things, and no matter whatever happens, whatever financial costs ever come my way, I should always know right now that I have the funds and the income and the plan and the savings and the retirement and the everything to take care of anything that could ever befall me financially. And I just don't even know what those things are to even know if I'm actually in alignment with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%.
So here's,
and I have some of those too, by the way, some of those unattainable things. I'm thinking of half a dozen.
That's exactly the point of, do you understand that it's not essential that you get everything right? And do you see how actually getting it in order is not even that important as much as it is understanding how many unattainable rules are you currently living under? How many beliefs do you have about what it would take for you to feel in a positive emotional state that is keeping you from experiencing a positive emotional state?
I do. Yeah. But I don't, it's not clear to me then what, I want to hear the rest of the story kind of now. You got me, you know, hooked on this thing. So how did you resolve these unattainable things?
Well, first of all, here are my new moving away values. Let's see here. I'm trying to see if certainty is on my list. So by the way, financial certainty was number one on my list. And I'm going to just share with you what my new moving towards values. One was peace, love, joy, and abundance. So that's what became my number one value, kind of all tied in together. And I said, these are always instantly available to me from within, regardless of any external circumstance. These attributes are my true nature, and I don't need to do anything to experience any of them. I simply am these things. I am peace. I am love. I am joy. I am abundance. It doesn't matter what fancy cars I have. It doesn't matter if there's debt. It doesn't matter if there's retirement. It doesn't matter any of those things. I can still experience peace, love, joy, and abundance. And I wrote that as my new rule. And by the way, it's the only rule that I wrote. Does that make sense?
It does. Let me ask you a question.
Yep.
So, this idea that you're not at peace when you're not financially secure was at the time that you wrote it was a description of your life. It was more than just an intellectual idea. This is the feeling that you had and observed, and you unpacked that to find this underlying value system.
Exactly.
And so then you recognize that that's a broken value because it's not attainable.
Yep.
So you made an intellectual decision to adopt a new value, right? You decided you were going to change that value.
I made an intellectual, emotional, and I would even add spiritual decision. It wasn't just intellectual. It was a fully associated every part of my being decision.
Yeah, that's what you got to. But you at first you realized, you know, thinking through this, it's like, aha, I see that I need to change this. What should I change it to? And so you observed that if you changed it to where you ended up, that would solve this gap, this problem.
That's exactly right.
My question is, how in the hell do you go from something that is an ingrained belief mm-hmm. from, you know, regarding something that, you know, a lot of people would probably just say, that's just how I am, right? I feel this way about this. How do you decide to feel a different way?
Yeah. So first of all, I love the thought, Mark, of this. The idea of that's just who I am. And a better way of saying that is...
I baited you with that, by the way.
A better way of saying it that is that's just the persona that I have developed over my lifetime. That's just the personality that I have created by all of the beliefs that I have adopted and agreed with from societal norms, from my religion, from my parents, from other people who are my peers who influence me, from movies, televisions, and culture. That's not who I am. Who I am is more than my beliefs. All right? But what I am willing to say is that's just the persona or personality that I have created by all of the beliefs that I've gathered and I hold on to. And so because I understand that that's not who I am, it's easier for me to say, wow, I can let go of some of these beliefs. So, by the way, I no longer agree with and or hold the belief that I should never be in debt outside of my mortgage. Matter of fact, I prefer to be out of debt, but there are times when being in debt might make sense. I'll give you a perfect example. Sure. So we become debt-free except for our mortgage in 2007. We go more than a decade, not a single cent in personal debt outside of the mortgage. But we have Free the Dream 2018. You know the story behind that. You even know the behind the scenes. I've been very publicly open about this. You know, we committed $60,000 to a budget. We ended up earning about $60,000 in sales, but the actual budget went over. And during the marketing of that event, so the event was a net loss of $6,000. But while I was marketing that event, I was not filling empty seats in my Next Level Mastermind as they were, you know, expiring their agreements, their 1-year agreement. But I'm like, that's no big deal because I'm going to make it up on the profit from this event. I'm absolutely convinced that we're going to start seeing, you know, I'm going to walk away with at least $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 profit from this Free the Dream 2018 conference. When in fact, I ended up losing $6,000 on the Free the Dream conference, and had I not banked on the idea that I was going to walk away with massive profit, I would have filled the seats, and the seats that I didn't fill ended up being a total loss of $38,000 or $32,000 plus the $6,000, and so I had a net opportunity cost of and loss financially of $38,000. Now, that was a big hit. Now, did we have an emergency fund? Yes. Was that one where we started to deplete some funds? It was. It's all going to work out. However, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, here's something else that I wasn't doing during the early stages of building my business. I wasn't putting money into retirement, but I also wasn't preparing for my kids to go to college financially. And so then all of a sudden now I've got some kids getting ready to go off to college. And now I'm paying for that out of the pocket. I'm just lost $38,000 on this live event. I've got all these different things going on. And that's my oldest daughter going off to college. But now that she's going off to college, she's taking this car with her. And my son is now driving my youngest daughter to school. And the car that he currently has access to, when you press the gas pedal, it hesitates, nearly stalls, but then picks up steam again. It's not necessarily the safest thing to do in the middle of an intersection. All right. So I'm like, I really need to get my son a better, more reliable car. I currently have exhausted and all of my emergency fund and I'm in this big thing. And of course, for me, I'm like, well, I can't go in debt. I can't go buy a car. I can't go get a personal loan under the old belief system and have peace. Now, the interesting thing, I had been working through some of these things. So for me, what happened is I'm like, oh, wait a second. I can go get a loan. There's no written law of the universe that says Cliff Ravenscraft cannot have personal debt outside of a mortgage. It's not a moral failure. Right. And so I'm like, of course, you know what? Let's go find a car, go on the lot. We took out a loan for, I don't know, $12,000, $13,000, bought him a used Honda Accord. And I took out the entire loan. It's like no money down, just put it all on there. Give me a payment. That's fine. And you know what? I lost no peace over that because I gave up the belief that I must be debt free outside of my mortgage. I'm like, it's a preference. I'd prefer to be debt free, but it's not required anymore for me to feel financially secure. There are times and seasons of life where I might be in a situation where having access to the fact that I have decent credit and they're willing to give it to me, that in a season, it might come in handy to go and just take out a personal loan. And so, you know what? We went and did that. At the same time, I took out a parent-student federal loan, which basically is like a student loan, except for putting it in Megan's name, I put it in our name. It was the same year. We put an entire year's worth of college on a federal government student loan, but it was in the parent's name, so it was in our name. So we're responsible for paying for it. So here I went more than a decade, Mark, with no personal debt outside of my mortgage. And I wasn't feeling any peace before rewriting these rules. And here I am after rewriting these rules. And I just took out it might have been a $17,000 loan for the car. But anyway, $12,000 to $17,000 personal loan for the car. And I ended up taking how much it cost for an entire year of college. I put that all on a federal student loan. And I had absolute peace and I had love, a joy, and abundance. And I could even argue I feel a sense of financial security. Why? Because the only thing that's required is to know that those feelings, those emotions are available within me. And the other things that I did to support this is I have a deep spiritual faith that says, don't worry about what you will eat or what you will drink or what clothes that you will wear. Seek first the kingdom of God and know that all of these things will be given. Everything works together for the good of those who are called according to his purpose. He knows your desires. He will, God is a provider. And so I began to lean in on these things. And it's like, I'm not usurping my own responsibility in managing finances by changing my rules. I'm just shifting what I believe is necessary for me to experience peace. So I may understand that I might have to deal with some consequences financially of not having done some of the things that I've been told all my life I should be doing more of. And I now am in a position where I'm taking out some loans where I previously said this is the worst thing I could ever do. But now here I am. I took out a personal loan on a car. I took out a ton of money for a year of college. And now I am in personal debt well beyond what I possibly could have imagined it, you know, this part in my life. And sure. the fun part is, Mark, if I would have stressed, if I would have been anxious, if I would have felt like a financial failure, I would have gotten myself into a stuck state that would have kept me from doing creative, positive, forward momentum things. I might have even thought about going out and getting another job or something a little bit more reliable and or whatever, you know, all this other stuff. Maybe this isn't for me. Maybe yeah. I'm on the wrong path. But because I had peace through the entire thing, this is no big deal. Everything's going to work out. And you know what? 18 months later, both the federal student loan and the car was completely paid off, and we went completely debt-free again. It's no big deal. And here's the thing.
Right.
The only thing that changed is during the 18 months that we were in debt, I had peace and joy and a sense of overwhelming abundance where I wouldn't have had it had I not done this exercise.
Got it. Okay. So have more clarity around why this is valuable. And I think I want to commit to spending the time to attempt this again with the expectation that I will complete it successfully and get a lot of value out of it, because this is pretty helpful. And in fact, I would say, you know, you're quite famous now for the way that you deliver these kind of things in Notion. And by the way, this is great. I'm looking at it now, this exercise in Notion. If there's some way for you to embed some of these examples that we talked about in this document, I think it will make it easier for people like me to complete this exercise.
I appreciate that.
Something.
I appreciate
that. Something there, because this some of these examples have unlocked maybe it's just me, but some of these examples have unlocked this for me. So I'm going to go back and do this.
Yeah. And also I appreciate that note. I will take it under valuable consideration and consider giving that. The one thing that I will say is that this assignment kind of came up very last minute in our previous session, in session number 4.
Yeah.
And right. typically go through all of this Yikes. And give examples, but it kind of came up at the last yeah. minute and I did throw it out kind of just, hey, go
under
and finish
normal
this.
Conditions, we would have had this conversation in the last coaching session.
That's exactly gotcha. What I'm saying. And so,
gotcha.
So okay. basically what I've done is I've already introduced you to the thing. I've showed you what mine were and what they became. And then I would send you off with the instructions.
All right. I feel better now. I'm going to go do this enthusiastically. I feel well, even better.
Let me ask you this on a scale of 1 to 10, how valuable do you think it would be for you now?
9.75.
There you go. So here's what I know now.
I'm an engineer. I'm not just going to give you an even number.
Here's what I know is now you're not going to get stuck in, oh my gosh, which one of these is more important than the other, but you're going to understand. It's like, hey, I'm going to keep letting my subconscious mind feed me and what else is required and what else is required and what else is required. There's one other thing I want to share with you, Mark, and that is on the moving away side. If we didn't talk about this last time, I want to bring this in. All of your rules that I'm going to give you a moving away rule, okay? So mine was one of the emotions that I most want to avoid. Matter of fact, my number one was humiliation, all right? It's a big thing for me. I don't want to feel humiliated. So the questions are, what could happen? What else could happen? What else could happen? And you keep going until your subconscious mind doesn't give you more. So I'm going to read this to you. Here's my list. Humiliation. What could happen for me to feel humiliated? to fail to live up to what I said I would do in the public eye. That's the first thing. Now, Mark, yep. I say a lot of things that I'm going to do in the public eye. This rule causes a lot of problem.
Yeah, right.
I talk and way too much about what things. I'm going to do.
Yeah.
All right, so the next one. To have anyone publicly criticize me. Little problem with this one. That particular rule is never within my control. So what I've just did is I've usurped and given away any power of me to have control over whether or not I feel that. Basically, what I just did is I put a big, huge button that says humiliation, and anybody on the planet can just push that button anytime, and I will be triggered into humiliation. That's what that rule gave.
Yeah, and I think for you, that's particularly problematic because your whole thing is to invite criticism. I mean, that's your whole business model is open to criticism because it's done in public, yep. Right? And so, you know, you're going to get ill-considered feedback on all manner of things as a built-in part of what you do.
Yep. Here's the next rule. What else could happen? And the next one was to have anyone privately criticize me, especially if it's somebody that I respect. Hey, Cliff, I want to talk to you about something. I'm a little concerned about how you've been communicating about such and such. I think that's a little out of character for you. And quite frankly, I don't think it's right. And if this comes from somebody who's, you know, now I'm absolutely humiliated. Do you see where I'm coming from?
100%, yeah.
All right, so the next one, and this is the last one that I listed here, but the last one that I listed is to have anyone personally criticize me and point out where I didn't line up to my own stated values and commitments. Now, this is anyone, personally, publicly, privately, doesn't matter. If you ever point out that I've made a commitment or stated something that I believe is my value and I'm currently not living in alignment with it, and you point it out to me, I will instantly feel humiliated. Now, the interesting thing is with these rules, any one of them that happens, you immediately feel the thing you don't want to feel. So whereas on the moving towards, all of the rules must be met for you to be able to feel the positive emotion. But on the moving away, any single rule that is met, only one is required to trigger the negative. All of the rules are required to trigger the positive. Any one rule can trigger the negative. That was the most mind-blowing to me. Now, let me see if humiliation. Yes. So here's my revised rule on humiliation. There's only one. Are you ready? Yeah. Nothing can humiliate me. I may try things and fail. However, as long as I am willing to learn from my experiences, there is no need to feel humiliated. Boom. Solved. Cliff Ravenscraft, since this exercise has been performed, I've never once felt humiliated. And Mark, transparently, authentically, I will tell you that since I've done this exercise, there are a number of things that I've made public commitments to, and I've talked very openly about, and I said, I'll never do this again, and this will never be a problem, that today I'm not in alignment with those things. Yeah. But here's what I will tell you. People could ask me about it. Hey, Cliff, I noticed that, you know, couple of months ago, there used to be your before and after pictures, and it says you've lost over 100 pounds and you work out 6 days a week. I noticed that little link to that quote is no longer on your Work With Me page. What's that all about? How's things going in your workout? Blah, 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 blah. And you could ask me that in a public podcast interview. And you know what, Mark? I would not feel humiliated.
And you would say, so I want to unpack that a little bit. So it's this disconnect between how did you get from I always feel humiliated whenever this happens, and I always have, to it's Tuesday and I just decided that's not going to be the case anymore.
Yeah. Like, first of all, I became.
How does that work?
Well, the first thing that I recognized is that I learned that I actually have the control of what emotional states that I feel. And what emotional states that I feel is always determined on three things: my physiology,
right,
my focus, what I put my attention on, and the meaning that I associate to it. And yep, so as soon as I became aware of that, then it became very easy when I came to this exercise to recognize that, wait a second, I could choose to never feel humiliated. That's just a decision.
That's right. So you recognize it as a choice that you're making.
That's exactly it. So if you look at my old rules, I would choose to feel humiliated if I once told somebody else that I was not going to do this, but then I'm not living up to that commitment. There's beliefs that are associated. I'm no longer credible. This is going to cause me to lose followers. People are going to no longer think that I'm able to help them. And all it's like, you know, he's wishy-washy. He's all of this stuff. And those are meanings that I could associate to the criticism and to the fact that I'm not living up perfectly to every commitment I've ever stated publicly. And because I had those old rules, I was choosing those meanings, and I wasn't aware of it. And so all of this is that the whole point of this exercise is to understand that the first half of it is to understand what you've been unconsciously living your life with.
Yeah.
And you said, wow, it's Tuesday and I've decided not to do this anymore, it's because, well, it's Tuesday and I just became consciously aware that this is what I've been doing to myself.
Right.
And now
did the exercise that I haven't done yet. That's what you're saying. Let's have this conversation again, Mark, after you've done the work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Is that helpful?
It's very helpful. And maybe a good segue back to the original question that we broached 40, 50 minutes ago.
Yep. So the original topic is seasons of motivation. Seasons of motivation.
Yeah.
So Mark, I have to ask you, are you a journaler by any chance?
I have tried to do that. So the answer is not a successful journaler. I feel like I would benefit from that, but I have endeavored to create that habit. I've tried, and I've tried apps, and I've tried notes, and I've tried combining it with a daily planning routine. I've tried all these things. I've tried special daily journals over the years. I mean, you know, and I've not been able to develop to keep the habit.
No worries. So the reason why,
I still want to. And in fact, one of the things that I just have been looking at recently is a lot of people that are a few of my friends at work have recently purchased these e-ink notepads, which it's like an iPad and a Kindle had a baby, basically. And it feels way more like paper than an iPad does. And it's e-ink, which is a way better. I mean, you're a Kindle guy. You know what I mean? That's just way better to look at than an iPad under any measure. And so these things are really cool. And I was thinking, wow, wouldn't it be neat to have an e-ink journal? So this is something that keeps coming back to that I haven't solved yet.
Well, we could, if it comes back around in this conversation, we could talk about it. You could decide in any of our future sessions to talk about it. I have all sorts of thoughts on journaling. I also have had seasons of my life where I definitely want to do this. I do it for a couple of days, sometimes a couple of weeks, and then I get out of it and going back and forth, back and forth. I will say that over the, well, since 2020, I can't imagine that I've ever gone more than a week without journaling since then. And today I've probably added 4 or 5 different things to my journal. And on average, I add between 1 to 20 or 30 things to my journal on a daily basis. Now, the reason why I bring this up in this question is because I want to talk to you next about looking for patterns. So you say that there are these seasons of motivation that come, and it's like, wow, I want to go and do this. I set these aggressive goals and I start taking action. I'm really excited. I have this burst of energy. I go and do all of these things. I set up plans. And I've seen your PowerPoints. I've seen 2 or 3 of these seasons where you've gone really deep into what you're going to, how excited you are, and it's like, here's quarter 1 and here's, you know, the 52
and made some progress.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely, it made some progress, and then the fizzle, you know, the fizzle kind of, it's just like, hey, I'm a little bit, you know, and this, you, by the way, it typically starts with, hey, I'm a little behind, but I think I can catch up. I'm only, you know, and I see in the next couple of days, I'm going to have some free time, and I think I'm going to be able to get back on target, back on target, back on target. But then, you know, and then there's like, okay, that didn't go exactly the way that I thought it was. Now I'm like, instead of being 2 weeks behind, I'm now 6 weeks behind, and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden I'm now demotivated or whatever. So your experience with this, Mark, I've experienced this. We've all experienced this. The one thing that I have found that is incredibly helpful is looking for the patterns of behavior. So here, you may be able to do this even though you don't have the journals to go back on. You recently started a new season of excitement and plan and stuff like that. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't it start when you reached out to me back in December and said, hey, let's do this 1 year of coaching together. We'll do podcast content out of it. And is that when it started? Was right around December, early beginning of January?
Yes, 100%.
So I got a question for you. Do you remember the last time you were this, when you were that excited or close to that excited when you had another season? And if the answer is yes, you do remember, was it also at the end of the year?
Probably, yeah. I certainly have these bursts at the end of the year. That's true.
Okay. So by the way, don't completely rely on that. But I'm going to ask you a question. Have you ever had any middle of the summer bursts of these where you start one of these level of excitement, of motivation, and I'm going to do this side project and I'm going to make this happen? Has that ever started for you in the middle of the year?
I can't recall one.
Okay.
Off the top of my head.
Okay. So the first thing to recognize are the seasons. And evaluate, it's like, here are some of the things that I look for. What time of day am I typically doing the things that I say I'm going to do when I get into these bursts of motivation? And what time did the sun set that day compared to when I started it to where I started to lose the motivation to do it? You'd be surprised how circadian rhythms, and I know that you're the late night internet marketing guy, right? But here's the thing. There's a very real pattern in how many hours between when the sun went down and when you started working on your side hustle compared to December, compared to May. There's a big difference in how many hours post sunset. And then the question becomes is, what is my routine and what do I typically do between those hours? And man, it feels like, gosh, the sun just went down and it's really late and I only got an hour to work on my projects, where I remember the sun went down and I went and started working on this and dude, I got 4 hours in. And do you see how we may not be consciously aware of how much since the sun went down that
Yeah.
Okay. And the reason why this has come up for me and it has been so helpful, I just started a brand new early morning routine. I have had seasons of early morning routines. For the last 3.5 weeks, I've been up at 4 a.m. every single morning by design. And that's just an absolute desire of mine. I want to start and have the first several hours of every day all to myself.
And you're doing that without an alarm clock, right?
Without an alarm clock, yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole nother topic I want to get into sometime.
Yep.
Either on this podcast or, you know, somewhere else. That we have to talk about that.
Yep. So I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and for the first week and a half, I'm getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm coming down to my office, and I'm sitting here at this desk in front of all of these computer monitors and in front of all of my productivity suites and all the things that I would typically be able to do to get productive work done. The only thing is, though, Mark, is my idea of my early morning routine is reading, studying, journaling, meditating, praying, and being creative in my thought of content creation. You get where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
So one of the things that I recognize is that, wow, I'm coming down here, and for the first 2 or 3 days, I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I came down and I was journaling, I was reading, I was studying. And about 3 or 4 days into it, I'm recognizing that I'm working on projects. Hey, I got this call. Mark sent me this text today. You know what? It's Friday. I'm going to do some research and see if I can't come up with some ideas of how I might talk to Mark today at 3:30 this afternoon, here at 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning. That's not what this time is for, but I'm in this environment. And so I was telling, and that's obviously this didn't just occur to me today and for this call, but I'm just giving an example. But I was telling Stephanie, I was like, you know what? I'm enjoying getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. It is so life-giving to have all these hours. But I find that I'm actually struggling to stay focused on the things that are life-giving, that self-care, that I'm just not feeling it. I feel like I go down and I start working, and the hours fly by, and I know that I'm doing valuable things for my business, but the hours just seem to fly by, and I still didn't meditate. I still didn't journal. And do you know what my wife said to me? She goes, why don't you go to the gym? Why don't you get up in the morning and immediately get dressed, brush your teeth, and grab your stuff, get in the car, and drive to the gym? Because I recall you going to the gym and you would sit there in the parking lot from 5 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock in the morning in the back parking lot overlooking the hills. And every single day you came home and said, wow, this is amazing. You should see how many things came to me and all the creative ideas and all this stuff. And then you would go into the gym and you'd work out for 45 minutes to an hour. And then you would come home and you'd take a shower and you'd start your day. And you haven't done that in a long time. Why don't you do that? And I'm like, wow, I will do that. And so then that was on Saturday. And then on Monday, I did exactly that. I was at the gym in the back parking lot by 5 a.m. And I opened up my day one journal and I started journaling about it. And I'm like, wow, it's been so long since I've had this. And now that I'm here, I'm reconnected. And wow, that 25 minute commute time listening to Tony on the way here, I forgot about how invaluable that was. And the drive home, that commute is so amazing. And this environment and looking at these hills in Kentucky is amazing. And this is what I've missed and all this stuff. And I started to think, wow, it's been so long since I've done this, but I must have got out of the habit when the pandemic hit. And so I'm sitting here spinning a story in my head and a narrative about the patterns that, you know, what got me out of this? And I blamed the pandemic. There's only one problem, Mark, and it occurred to me. I specifically recall having this early morning 5 a.m. spot, 5 to 8 a.m., in the back parking lot of Planet Fitness, sitting in my 2021 Honda Accord Sport. The only problem is that's after the pandemic.
That's right.
And I'm like, yep, something's faulty in my beliefs about when and what these patterns are. So what did I do? I went to my day one journal and I looked at every single entry that was tagged with the location 470 Viewpoint Drive, Fort Wright, Kentucky, Planet Fitness. and I got to see all of the seasons that I was in and out, in and out, in and out. And every one of them are timestamped. And what I discovered, Mark, it wasn't the pandemic. Yes, the pandemic was one thing that broke me out of my routine. But then all of a sudden, I began to understand, wait a second, there are several different patterns of things that happened. Every time I had a commitment to go to a conference, when I was in the morning routine before I left, I never immediately jumped back into it when I got home from the week-long conference. Every single time, that broke my pattern. It got me out of that early morning routine. It got me out of that season of motivation, that season of creativity. Another thing, I didn't realize this. There was a time when everything was going great, and then we got a dog. And when we got a dog, he was a little puppy. And he was waking up at 1 or 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and sometimes multiple times overnight. And I journaled about that from home, not at the gym, because you see where I'm coming from? It's like, wow, okay, so there's that. Then there was a time when my daughter brought home a boyfriend from college, and he stayed here for 2 weeks. And he invited himself. He says, hey, do you mind if I go to the gym with you? And that was another time that got me out of my routine. It's like, well, I'm not going to, sure, come sit in my car. We're gonna head out to the gym at 4 o'clock in the morning. And for the first 3 hours, you need to sit in the passenger seat while I sit here and do my meditation, reading, and journaling. Right. No, sure. We're going to leave at 7:30 in the morning. We'll go work out and come back. Well, when he left 2 weeks later, I never got back into the routine. I saw the break in the pattern. And there was one others, and it happened on multiple occasions where at the time, Stephanie's like, man, I'm seeing so many things that you're able to achieve. I think I might want to go to the gym. Is there any chance that you and I could work out together? And every time she asked me that question, I said yes. And my wife does not desire to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. So we would always work out at different times, and I would break that routine and that pattern. And so now, because I had the journaling and I'm looking for these patterns, when did they start and how did they get broken? And this is what I'm encouraging you to look for. So what comes up for you as I share all of that?
Yeah. Definitely. I have youth sports kids. So definitely these things get started when we're not, and I'm all in on that, either as a coach or a number one fan or whatever I'm doing. So, definitely these things are happening. These periods are starting at a time when we're not in that. They also, we do a lot of homework around my house. And as the engineer, I'm in charge of math and science homework around here. So, we're doing that. So there's a lull in, these periods of enthusiasm are definitely coming when there's lulls in other activities. So, one way to look at that is I've got a lot more margin during these periods of productivity. and in periods when I don't have the time, it's not just that I'm not making the time. It's also feels to me like it's frustration that comes with that. So, I don't know how that's all piling up there. There's also a procrastination element too that I got to figure out, that I have no problem procrastinating when I'm in these periods of intense productivity. But as that starts to wane, the procrastination fills the space. So that's also something that I've noticed. So, it may be something else to journal about. It's like, what did I actually do today? Like, and why? Right. But, so that's what pops up for me.
So a couple of things that I heard that popped up for you. Number one is, in December, my kids are not involved in sporting activities. And so I get very hyper focused on all of this margin that I have. And so I create plans. Now, looking back to this past December, when you created all your plans and you created your PowerPoint and your 12 week runs, is that what they are? 12?
The
12 week year. Yep. Yeah, the sprints. So when you were planning all that, did you at the time plan for baseball season starts back on such and such? There you go.
Nope.
So this is beautiful. This is perfect.
I was unrealistic about how much time and energy I would have.
That's exactly it.
You know, and another thing I'm realizing that's true now that I'm 50 something years old instead of 40 something years old is I need a little more margin than I needed 10 years ago. I need a little more sleep. I need a little more downtime. And so, like, I, you know, 10 years ago, I would stay up until 2 a.m. and get up at 5:30 a.m. and go into work. Now, if I do that, there's a penalty, a bigger penalty. Right. And so that's affecting my ability to borrow from the margins is reduced.
Yeah. So Mark, what I heard is that prior to this right here, what we just pointed out in December, I did not anticipate in my 12-week sprint plans for the year the fact that I would have reduced number of hours due to my motivation to be all in as a sporting family parent. And so rather than being frustrated and experience frustration today over the fact that you're procrastinating and you're not putting things and stuff like this, why don't you have the opportunity to recognize that, wait a second, when I made that PowerPoint, when I created all these 12-week sprints, I did not anticipate or plan for or even consider how much fulfillment and satisfaction and joy I get with attending every baseball game. Or is your daughter in a sport as well?
No, volleyball.
And volleyball game. So what you didn't account for is the amount of joy, love, abundance, and satisfaction you get from this season. It wasn't in your 12-week sprints for the year. And so now, it rather than getting frustrated by that, just recognize it. You see the pattern, at least one element of this pattern, and it's like, wow, okay, I need to begin to adjust my expectations based upon this. And this is where journaling comes in. It's like, okay, during sporting season, during baseball and volleyball, I tend to have this many hours of productive time. And you might want to start journaling or taking note during non-volleyball and baseball times. I tend to have this many productive hours. Yeah. And now you're doing is you're actually working within the constraints that are actually there, whereas you are actually working in a fairly unconstrained period of hours and trying to fit those sprints into a reduced number of hours that are more constrained.
Yeah, and I'm going to make another connection here. Really what the deal is my moving towards values are the ones that are associated with me being present and engaged and part of all the things that are going on in my household. They're higher than whatever the moving towards values are that are associated with building, you know, accomplishing this task that I'm working on. That's really what's happening here is that this value system that I've got, and by definition, since they're my own values, that should be okay. What I need to do is be more aware of them.
That's exactly it.
Which goes back to me doing this, it's a family show, frickin' exercise. So, okay.
Yes. That's it. So
I'm not too big to admit when you're right.
Well, but yeah, it's not necessarily that I'm right. It's just that it's like, wow, these are valuable realizations to come to, and I can have more of what I want, which, by the way, more of what I want is rarely ever the achievement of tasks. more of what I want is how I feel, how I want to feel. Here's the interesting thing.
That's right.
When I look at Mark Mason, I've never seen Mark Mason as a man who goes in spurts of being incredibly motivated and then incredibly, you know, procrastinating and all this other stuff. I've never once viewed you that way. Instead, I've always seen you as a fully motivated person who is consistently living in alignment with his values. And what I mean by that is when it's the winter time and there's no sporting events, Mark Mason is definitely all in his day job. He does an incredible job, well above and beyond what's anticipated and expected of him. He over delivers in his day job at all times. I've never seen a time, a moment in all of the years I've ever known Mark Mason where he did not, where he was not motivated to over deliver at work. And during these seasons when he's got all these extra free time and it's all, he really gets excited and he goes all in and he gets super motivated and he takes massive action, like well beyond the average bear. I mean, it's like it's insane how much he can get done. And then when it's baseball season, he's incredibly motivated to never miss a single baseball game. He's incredibly motivated to never miss a volleyball game. He's incredibly motivated to say, hey, I really appreciate the opportunity. I'm going to miss social media and marketing world this year because I'm super motivated to be this dad in this season of my life.
That's right. That happened twice.
Twice. And I saw that as an act of motivated Mark doing what he most feels called to be in this world. Your kids are not always going to be in your house. They're not always going to be there for you to be that present. They're not always going to desire for you to spend that much time with them. That's just the fact of life. And so you're doing what's most important to you. So as far as I'm concerned, I don't really think you're going through seasons of motivation. It's just that where your motivation is applied changes with the seasons.
Yeah, like things in my, you know, available options in my environment are changing. And when my values get applied on top of that, my priorities change.
Yeah.
I need to be more aware of that.
Yeah. And the other thing is
that's very helpful, Cliff. Thank you.
It is my pleasure. The other thing is when you're setting these goals and expectations in these 12-month sprints, just evaluate as much as you can. Hey, what is life going to look like this? And some of that if you had a practice of regular journaling, you'd have more data to work with.
Yeah, right. No, I see. And I think also, you know, a side effect for me the reason that I want to develop that habit is because I also feel like it keeps me off of autopilot.
Yes.
Because it makes me more intentional because I have to evaluate what's going on around me. And that makes me more intentional even, you know, just day by day where I go, I said I was going to do this yesterday and I didn't do it, or this week or last week or what, you know, it's a practice of, you know, check, do, plan, act, check, do, plan, act kind of stuff. So, you know, that was my original motivation. And then what you said is also true. And then as a result of that, well, yeah, you got all kinds of things you can look at and say, okay, I need to decode this, and you've got data from which you can operate. So that's right.
So you talk about the fact that, you know, one of the benefits that could come from journaling is getting out of autopilot. I want to tell you about like my awakening to how I realized that just how much of my life I was just habitually doing the same thing over and over again. So I was working, mutual friend of ours, Daphne Scott, I was working with her, and I told her I was thinking about creating a going through a season where I might start logging where am I investing my time, effort, and energy, because I sense that I'm experiencing a lot of time working, but I feel like I'm not accomplishing hardly anything. It's like I do a lot of things, but at the end of the day, if you were to ask me to tell you what I did that was valuable, I'm not sure that I could actually give you very much of a good answer that I would be happy with.
I understand completely. Yeah.
So she told me about an app, and I'm not recommending this to you by any stretch of the imagination, but this is, you know, I get a little obsessive compulsive about some things, but there's an app called the A Time Logger. So it literally is called that. It's the lowercase A, capital T for time, capital L for logger. That's the actual name of the app. It's called A Time Logger. And what you can do with this app is you can go in and create all of these different categories of things that you would invest your time in doing. And all you have to do is click like read for growth. I just tapped it and it immediately started a time log. So it's actually counting up right now. So far, I've been reading for growth for 8 seconds. Now, I might also be in growth, personal growth and development. So I could actually have both of those time logs going together at the same time. So
I see, yeah.
So the interesting thing is I can close this app and I can sit here and read for personal growth for a very long period of time. Then what I can do is I could go in and I could stop the reading thing, but growth and development is going to continue, but I'm going to now start journaling because those are two different categories, but growth and learning is still happening. So I stopped the reading timer. I started the journaling. So now I'm going to sit here and journal. This was obsessive. I did it for 2 weeks. And what I became convinced of is that I'm spending way too much on social media. I was spending way too much time in the bathroom. And yes, I tracked how much time I was in the bathroom. I'm not kidding you. It's like, okay. But my wife says, are you going to the internet cafe? Because that's what
that's funny.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. And so what became so aware to me is just how unconsciously I am doing what I would consider to be very poor habits on an ongoing, consistent basis, wasting a lot of my valuable, productive, and creative energy forces.
Yep.
And once I became, by the way, didn't know I was doing it, had no clue. I was completely unaware. I was on autopilot. It's kind of like that thing where I drove, you know, you drive home from work and it's like, hey, I don't remember once ever turning my turn signal.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
You know, it's just what I do. And that's how I was going through life. And when I started logging this and looking at how many hours on this and this, and I'm like, listen, I'm not here to change any of my habits or behaviors right now. Just want to get a snapshot of what they are actually looking like. And so I went for 2 weeks, trocked myself, and I'm like, okay, things have got to change. And boom, I went like, one of the things that I did is I came out of that mark, and there was a time I deleted every social media app off of my phone. I didn't delete all of my accounts, and I still allowed myself, if I needed to, for business purposes, to go and log in via web browsers on my desktop computer, but my phone had no social media accounts. And the other thing that I chose to do is I might check to see if anybody's reached out to me, but I will post no social media for 30 days. And it's like, I wonder what life would be like if I did this and this and I made this change. And all of a sudden, I realized, wow, I have a lot of power and control over my experience of life as long as I remain consciously awake to what it is I'm actually doing with my time, my effort, and my energy.
Okay, so I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to download this app and I'm going to do this for 2 weeks and see what happens. I've never done this. I've heard of people doing this before, but I've never done it.
Yeah, it for me, it was an eye-opener. I don't recommend it for anyone, and I just want to state again, I'm not recommending this activity for you, but you know, it will be interesting to see what your results are, provided you do it. But man, for me, it was just like it was a wake-up call.
Yeah, I mean, I recommend it for me. So yeah, I'm curious to get a full accounting of what I'm doing. So how hard was it for you to have the discipline to actually use the app? Is it pretty easy to use? Does it help you?
It's not terrible. It took me probably an afternoon, maybe a full day, to really acclimate to how the app works and how to go in and do this and change this icon to this icon and stuff like that. But once you figure it out, max, it'll take you a day and a half, and you'll know everything you need to know about the app. And
I know what it's going to say right now, because we're in the baseball playoffs, so it's going to tell me I'm watching a lot of baseball.
And the question is that a conscious, right now?
Yeah, not a bad thing, right? No way I'd change that.
That's exactly it.
And I got you.
So for me, it's like, wait, not everything that's been logged here is bad. Some of these things that I've been doing are really good, but I've not been giving myself credit for those things and how valuable they are. And it's like, wow, it's good to see that this is a part of my life. But there are some things that I'd like to change. And just that awareness, that being consciously aware that this is happening. And I can't begin to tell you, Mark, even since then, how many times we call it falling back asleep or going back into hypnotic rhythm. And it just happens. And what for me, it shows up in my journaling. I'm able to go and say, oh, what happened? Okay, I can definitely see there was like a 37-day streak of journaling, and then I went dark for 3 weeks. Well, what happened in those 3 weeks? Let me see what I can find there. And it's right. And it's finding the patterns.
Okay, so we're close to time. Lots of takeaways here, right? So I'm more convinced than ever of the value of this exercise, and I'm going to recommit to completing it in a way that's meaningful. Okay. And not just giving it lip service, but really doing it. We talked about, seasons, and I'm going to go reassess my plan in the context of what's really going on in my life and see part A, the things that are driving my engagement in this. And then, I want to make another attempt. I'm actually going to try and use day one again. I really liked that app, and I just, it's ubiquitous too, which is nice for me because it's on my cell phone, it's on my tablet, it's on my, my desktop. So that's a really nice thing about it. So I'm going to try and use that, and I'm definitely going to, spend 2 weeks with this A-time logger. And then we can discuss all of those things next month when we meet.
I love it. Mark, it is always a privilege. It's always an honor. And I can't wait until session number 6.
I can't either. And I hope this is helpful to the people that are listening to it, because it's unusual to have a transparent conversation like this that you can listen in on, and I hope that people value it, because I value it. So I hope it's valuable to someone out there.
Well, I get feedback all the time that people are finding a tremendous amount of value. So
oh, great! Tell you, that makes me really happy, because that's also one of my values.
Yep,
as you know,
it's definitely making a difference. All right, guys, real quickly, I want to let you know, if you're listening to this, you're probably a coach. That's why you're listening to Cliff's Notes on Profitable Coaching. I want to let you know that I have this weekly group coaching program called Next Level Coaching Program. It's for anybody who wants to master the skill of client acquisition. If you want to learn how to attract clients who will absolutely love the experience of coaching with you without feeling like you're cold calling people, trying to convince them, you know, why they need you and all this other stuff through the old marketing methods. But if you would like to learn how to, let's just say, use something like the Prosperous Coach approach from the book The Prosperous Coach by Steve Chandler and Rich Lidfin, I have mastered that skill and would love to share with you all of the distinctions that I've learned along the way. Not only that, but I also have some pretty good skills in sales funnels and sales pages and copywriting and marketing messages, and not to mention 30 years of experience in just flat out sales. And I bring all of this to bear to help you build a profitable coaching business. Every single week, up to 90 minutes, you can participate. And if you sign up, you instantly get access to currently the 35 previous 90-minute sessions, where every single one of them is archived and they're all listed of each and every question that was asked, summarized, and the timestamp of where you can find it in that video. So there's literally countless hours of archived, amazing content to help you grow personally and professionally as a coach. And here's the interesting thing. If you are listening this far into this podcast, all you have to do is email me, cliff@cliffravenscraft.com, and mention this podcast episode, and I will let you be my guest in the Next Level Coaching Program at no cost. You can join two sessions for free. All you have to do is email me, cliff@cliffravenscraft.com, put Next Level Coaching Program in the subject line, and write that you're interested in your two free sessions in the Next Level Coaching Program. And there's no strings attached, no expectation, no obligation that you'll join. You'll just be invited as my guest to be a participant and experience what this weekly call is. And if you choose to stay, we'll talk about what that looks like, but no expectation, no obligation. And I can't wait to hear from you. Cliff@cliffravenscraft.com. Mark, thank you so much, my friend.
Hey, can I pile onto your promo for a minute?
Sure.
Would you mind?
Go right ahead.
Well, you know, I've been on the inside of that thing. So, I won't even talk about that. You know, I have a friend, a close friend who is in that program, and he and I have lunch periodically. And oftentimes during our lunch, he recounts to me his takeaways from that program and thanks me for introducing him to you. So I can tell you, that is an impactful thing. And this isn't just some random dude. I mean, this is a guy who's successfully, built and sold businesses with 8-figure digit numbers. And, you know, this is a guy with a lot of experience getting a tremendous amount of value out of that coaching program and out of working with you directly. And so anybody who doesn't take advantage of this offer, that's a real missed opportunity, because there's just an amazing amount of stuff accumulated in there. So just thought I'd throw that in since I'm here.
I appreciate that. You're right. And I will tell you, it always warms my heart, because obviously Russell, who you referred to me, came to me as a one-on-one client, and I appreciate that. And then I told him about the Next Level Coaching Program, and knowing his schedule, his commitments, and all of the things going on in his world, the fact that he shows up usually to 2 or 3 calls a month every single month since I've been working with him, that says a lot to me, and it's like, oh man, this is got something good going on here. So thank you for that. I appreciate it. All right, until next time, I encourage you to take everything you do to the next level. Mindset Answer Man.